What would society look like if everyone started life on equal footing? If we all had equal access to education, housing, and nutrition, regardless of our ethnic heritage, good health care, and a safe, nurturing environment that provides a start to life where all children are given the same opportunities and assistance. It is possible, but it takes work. We're discussing racial equity, what it means, and what it will take to get there. And we'll take your calls today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
And by
Alaska Regional Hospital, with hospital-wide renovations and upgrades. It's a brand new day at Alaska Regional Hospital. Alaska Community Action on Toxics believes future generations have the right to clean water, clean air, and toxic-free food. Learn more by visiting akaction.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Community Action on Toxics. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. What is racial equity? How do you define racism? What is white privilege? What is institutional racism? There are lots of questions that surround the issue of who we are collectively as human beings and how we treat each other. We're tackling what can be a painful, heated issue, but fortunately we have people here in the studio that can help us better understand our common interests and find ways to respect and celebrate our differences. Welcome, Jory Paoli. Jory is with the First Alaskans Institute, also... Hi, Jory.
Hey.
Thanks for being here. Also, Mao Tosi is in the studio. Hi, Mao.
Hello.
Mao spends a lot of time helping young people feel good about who they are, just as they are. He's also an Anchorage businessman. And Kevin McGee is also with us. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. Kevin is the first vice president for the Anchorage chapter of the NAACP Branch 1000. Welcome to all of you. Thanks so much for being here today for this important discussion. Jory, earlier this month, the First Alaskans Institute held the first Racial Equity Summit. And I want you to tell us about that goal. But first, I'm going to put the numbers out there. So if people want to join our conversation from around the state, it's statewide, it's 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Jory, the First Alaskans' first Racial Equity Summit, what was the goal with putting this together?
Well, first of all, thank you for having us here. I love that everyone keeps saying it was the first racial equity summit. I love it. No, I think it's really great. Our intent was to host one, right? And I mean, even in the middle of the summit, people were coming up and asking when the next one was going to be. And
good.
So I think that's wonderful. I think that's really great. So the work that First Alaskans Institute has been engaged in around advancing Native dialogues on racial equity has been going on since 2010. And so in the first phase of our work, it was really about advancing the level of healing and awareness about race issues in Alaska and advancing policy solutions toward racial equity. And the way that we chose to advance those goals in the first phase of our work was to host conversations about the issues of race and racism. In that first phase of the work, which was about 3 years, our original intent was just to host six community conversations, mostly based in Anchorage, asking Alaska Native people, people of color, and the community at large, where are we as people as it relates to race and race issues, and where do we want to be? And we realized pretty quickly that we needed to advance the conversation throughout the state within all communities. And to be able to do that, we had to invite people to come and join us in the project. And so we trained up 17 hosts to utilize our approach to hosting conversations on racial equity. They're based on Indigenous values. And as a result, we were able to host 56 conversations in 9 communities across Alaska in that same time frame. As we went into this second phase of the work, as you had mentioned earlier, talking about institutional racism, we broadened out our scope to really focus on three key areas: advocacy and education, legal advocacy, and then public perception. And our intent really is to help to make racial equity a shared value of all Alaskans. And one of the ways that we approach that was the avenue of the Racial Equity Summit. 3 years ago, when we dreamed up, you know, what would it look like if we were to host the summit here in Anchorage, Alaska, having an open conversation about the race issues that we face in our state and collectively have conversations about what we can do to advance equity. At the time, it didn't feel like we were quite ready, but we knew that if we continued to have the conversations, that we would hit the point where we could have the summit. And so, as you mentioned, February 1st and 2nd was when we hosted it here in Anchorage. We had around, I think, 300 participants in person and just about 300 people that tuned in online, which was phenomenal. And it was an incredible experience.
Yeah, I was there for part of the first day. I wished I could have been there for both days because the time that I was there was very fruitful, and I was really pleased to see how full the room was, mm-hmm. how many people took time to participate. I want to talk more about that, but Mao, first tell us about the work that you do with young people and what you're aiming for with AK Pride and some other of the youth programs that you're involved in, not only in Anchorage, but across the state, correct?
Yeah, no, thank you for having me also to be a part of this dialogue. I think it's important to kind of continue the dialogue always, that it doesn't get quiet as far as racial equity and making sure that we keep it out there. As for myself, you know, I was very fortunate to have mentors in my life to provide options that motivated me to make better choices. So fortunate to fall in love with basketball, fall in love with sports, and it helped to develop my skills. And I had the opportunity to go off to college. And so through sports, and the great thing about sports is what it does is it brings people of other races, of other beliefs together. And you have to work together in order to be successful. And so going to junior college in the middle of Kansas, where being the only Samoan out there, was definitely an eye-opener. But I'm part of a team, so it was the commonalities that brought us together that allowed us to be more open-minded with each other. So, you know, those things that I learned through sports is what I bring to the table now, that as a businessman and as a citizen of Anchorage, I look at ways to bring us together, that commonalities are important, that what we love is definitely a place to start and begin and to grow. So if it's sports, it can be culture, it can be music, art, dance, photography, anything that brings us together. And so for me, I looked at that one thing that was missing, and to provide a niche, was to look at those outlets that youth needed, that it was a big an important piece of my life that truly saved me. So it was an obligation that I had to also do the same back. And so providing consistency to students out there, but I use sports. It was something that myself and a youth would have in common. I could just speak on sports and just say, hey, what do you like, football or basketball? And then, oh, yeah, by the way, I was player of the year in basketball. Decades and decades ago, but it's something that opens their eyes to say, oh, wow, he's almost like me. So just that commonality, and then providing consistency, that if we could see each other once a week, then let that lead to twice a week, and it just opens a student up more. So a lot of what I do in Alaska Pride is, and AK Pride is an acronym for Alaska People Representing Integrity and Diverse Experiences. So it is to utilize all those commonalities to bring us together, but providing consistency and caring mentors will grow that. And so very fortunate to look at my past life and realize how important that mentor was in my life, but it was someone who wasn't Polynesian, who wasn't Samoan, that made that difference. And to know that it was another person, that it showed me an example that others care about you, not just your family. And so I get to be that example now and showing that others care about you, not just your family, and pushing that message throughout Alaska that we're all in this together, that even with the issues that we're facing, unemployment, sexual assaults, substance abuse, suicide, It's an issue in Barrow. It's an issue in Anchorage as well. And it's to see that there are kids here dealing with those. But the kids out in our rural communities realize that there's not very many options out there. And our kids in Anchorage say, well, we can help as well. So if we can connect with them more, what do we have in common? So it's our dance, our culture, our music, our passions for the things that we love that keep us growing together. So we're more open-minded to each other if we care about each other. But it's something that we're pushing to our young folks and trying to plant that seed so that they can continue to pass it on as we're just trying to break all the cycles that are affecting our Alaska. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for that. That statement about someone cares for you outside of your family, I think, is really so important and really kind of succinctly ties up a lot of what we're going to be talking about today. And if you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about racial equity today. My guests in the studio are Jory Paoli with the First Alaskans Institute, Mao Tosi, who is an Anchorage youth advocate and an Anchorage businessman and works with young people across the state. Kevin McGee is first vice president of the Branch 1000 chapter of the NAACP here in Anchorage. And Kevin, let's get you in here now. What work do you undertake in the state to help people of color and to educate the rest of us about what equality means?
Good morning. I'm really appreciative of participating in this, and I look at this group as a fellowship because we have obviously three minorities, and we're coming together to express how we feel about our state and our fellow Alaskans. The NAACP, even though it's identified as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, actually we take in any and all as far as our membership. So anyone that's welcome, everyone is welcome to join. So we'd like to get a perspective of everyone's concerns and issues throughout the state. In relation to our branch, we identify first with Anchorage because this is our home area, and we also have a branch in Fairbanks. Our prime concern right now is to identify where we have a lack of equity, racial equity within our city, and we do have those issues that come about in jobs, both city and state, and we'd like to get everyone more inclusive into the process. One of our programs, one of our key programs that we help within our youth community, we have a program that's identified as ACTSO, A-C-T-S-O, and that stands for Academic, Cultural, Technological, and Science Olympics. And this is a program we have every year that eventually can advance an individual from the state level to the regional issue to as far as a national issue, as far as scholarship opportunities and so forth. And we like to give out scholarships to any and all students that meet the criteria, regardless of race, creed, or color. So we like to see things that improve the lives of our youth here in Anchorage. We're looking forward to seeing what we can do to try to stem some of the violence that's occurring here in our city. We don't have all the answers, but we like to sit down together and look for ways to resolve the problems and see where we can help. The NAACP also likes to see that we'd like to ensure that every eligible Alaskan is registered to vote, because voting is a primary responsibility of everyone. And if everyone doesn't get out to the polls and vote, then you don't have the opportunity to have your voices heard. One of the other things that we are appreciative of, approximately 2 years ago, the NAACP, we partnered with the Alaska Federation of Natives. That was a fabulous event that we had, because we had a summer picnic and a voter registration drive that we held at Mountain View, and it turned out to be fabulous. It was really a coming together of the community and working with the president of AFN, Julie Kitka, it was just a remarkable experience. And I'm still appreciative to how it turned out. So all in all, it just looks to bring about an opportunity of fairness and making sure that everyone's voice or everyone has an opportunity for their voice to be heard. And we would like to have everyone come out because we don't have all the answers. And we would like to get input from everyone and anyone that would like to realize a fair and equitable opportunity to be heard.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about racial equity. And before I move on to some questions about day-to-day things that happen that are kind of highlighting what we're talking about, I want to talk just a little bit about or ask about language itself, the idea of focusing on the concept of race, the word race, words like minority, majority, those kinds of words that sort of separate us just in their language. Is it productive to use those things? Or when I think about racial equity, what we're really talking about is ethnic diversity, where we all came from, where our ethnic roots are from. We're all one race. We're all human beings. And it seems to me that when we start talking about different races, that's always troubled me because I feel like, okay, that's separating us. And then anytime you're separating people, there's an opportunity for one group to feel like, eh, maybe we're better than you. So how do you feel about those words, that language? Jory, I see you nodding here.
Yeah, I would love to share a story that was formational in the way that we decided to approach our racial equity project. So several years back, you may recall, Alaska reached 50 years of statehood. There were celebrations surrounding that event, and something that we recognized with First Alaskans and others within the Native community was that there was a voice that was absent in the conversation about what statehood looked like. And so to address that, First Alaskans traveled around the state to ask Alaska Native people how we experienced the days leading up to, during, and after statehood. And this was before my time at First Alaskans, but it's really important in the way that we form our approach to the work. So in traveling all around the state, something that came up time and time again were the many ways that the Alaska Native voice was suppressed leading up to the formation of Alaska as a state, and then in the formal formation of it, so the Constitutional Convention. If you look at the photograph of the delegates, it's predominantly white men. There are very few women, very, very little people of color, one Alaska Native person. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we often talk about how Alaska is this incredibly diverse place, but when it comes to our diversity being on display in the positions that actually form the policies that shape our world in Alaska, that isn't always the case. And so in these community conversations all over the state, discrimination came up time and time again. The final conversation that we hosted was in Juneau. And from First Alaskans, we had our then CEO, Janie Leisk. Mm-hmm. She was there, our senior fellow, who is now the Lieutenant Governor, Byron Mallott. Liz Medicine Crow, who's now our president and CEO, but at the time she was our director of our policy center, and Vic Fisher, the last remaining alive Constitutional Convention delegate. So they were the folks that were traveling around Alaska. And in Juneau, according to protocol, there's a very specific order by which you can speak. And so they had this listening session where they were asking, you know, how Alaska Native people felt about statehood. And towards the end of the day, there was a young man who had been waiting for his turn to speak. And he came to the microphone and he said, "I feel like we need to do away with this notion of equality, because what equality has always meant to our people is that we've had to give up who we are as Native people to be considered equal. And I think the conversation should instead be about equity. We should be talking about how every person can bring their whole selves forward and be valued for that." And so I feel like that's a really important distinction when it comes to the difference between equality as defined by what equal looks like. Someone is deciding what is equal versus equity, where every person is able to bring their, like you said, their full background, the diversity of their culture forward and be valued and appreciated for that.
Please, Mao or Kevin, you want to add to this idea of, is the word race important or is it divisive?
Within the work that I do within the community and with the kids, I think it's always important to represent the whole. You know, that it is to, I utilize the commonalities because we are of different races and all those things, but it's where we need to begin some type of relationship that at least once a day we can get together specifically for basketball, but it allows us to open up for each other to kind of learn about each other a little more. But the other side of it is that is that they're more open-minded, but I think that our, like with me, sorry, I'm losing my words here, but our kids that come to me are looking for an opportunity to at least be somewhere, be a part of something first, and then from there, it's trying to grow that into something more, that they might not come to us with the value already and the confidence already, and that's the thing, is let's accept them as they are right now, because as they grow, they'll get stronger. And as they get stronger, and if you ask them, are you a minority? In the past, they might have been quiet about answering that. But in the future, in a few years, they're more, yes, I am, and I'm proud to be that. But it wasn't a pride that they had in the beginning. It was found being a part of a collective, you know, being a part of a team, being a part of a family, and growing from that moment that you had that consistency is what I love about the work I represent, is you give people, you give kids who are not a part of something an opportunity to be a part of something. So from there, they get stronger, that they didn't realize that they were a part of this varsity football player, but the varsity football player, I'm sharing, hey, you see that kid there? You're the big brother. So if you can watch out for him, I watch out for you. You see how that works, mm-hmm. as we just keep passing it on. It's not about our color or our race, but as we're growing, we're trying to show them how to be better big brothers and big sisters first. And as they're doing that, and as that time together grows, they're asking more questions. They're asking about their past, about their heritage. And so it's not for me to answer it. It's for me to refer them to the ones who have the best resources and the most credible answers. I kind of represent the masses, is how I look at it, is that if within the masses that they're more receptive because they know we care, it's to connect them to the other resources that are available that provide those the quality, because I'm not the one to provide that piece, but just the connection is what I represent. If we're all a piece of the puzzle, then I see my role to play within that. So,
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-8255 or 478-TALK. Also locally, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can email us talk@alaskapublic.org. Kevin McGee with NAACP. Language, using words, race, majority, minority. What do you think about that? Maybe I'm more troubled by it than anyone else. I don't know.
Well, from my perspective, one of the a narrative that we have within our state is that we do not truly have inclusion, specifically when it comes to state and city government positions and so forth. Because we don't have, like currently in our own state legislature, we don't have a wide enough representation of what our true population is. If you look at the makeup of our state legislature, it's predominantly old white men. Not saying that I'm young, but on that same token, we don't have a more inclusive legislature that involves all of the representative people mm-hmm. within our state. The same goes for our city government, where it's not truly representative of our city. We have been identified as having the most diverse community in the nation. Our high schools and middle schools and even our elementary schools have been identified as being the most diverse. Well, from that perspective, then we need to also have that type of representation amongst our city officials. And it's one of the things that the NAACP has asked both at the state level and the city level, is how can we become more inclusive and be more involved in our state and city government to show that we truly have a representation throughout the city and state. So from the perspective of the NAACP, we like to see that people of color are more included, and they also have a voice other than between themselves. So they like to get the perspective out there to the city and the state. One of the issues that we found that was disheartening was maybe, I think, 2 years ago, approximately, it might be three, but when our state legislature went through the process, or state legislature went through the process of redistricting, and one of the only person of color at the time that was in state government was Senator Bette Davis. And when the political process went through with the redistricting, then there was no longer a person of color, i.e. a woman of color, that was in the state legislature. So that became, we felt that became like a disadvantage amongst the African-American community. There was ways to review that and look at it, but no one followed through on the process. So now you look at certain ethnic backgrounds are being disadvantaged once again. We have problems within our school systems and so forth that we need to see that those are improved, because that benefits everybody. So we look at it from the standpoint that these are our future leaders. So we have to do whatever is necessary to improve their lives, and that way we can move forward.
All right. Well, thank you so much to all of you. This is a great conversation, and we're going to go to the phones quickly. Bill is in Homer. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi. I really appreciate the conversation that you're having. I've been festering over being here in the Homer area for the last 3 years. I was born in Fairbanks. I was adopted by white people. I'm Native. I've been self-diminishing myself throughout my life. It was a tough upbringing, but nevertheless, I took a hospice training class here in Homer, and not only the trainer got up, who's a member of the community, and she goes, now she said who she was, and she goes, Homer is very proud to be a non-Native community. I was the only Native person there in the classroom, and it was a tough class. It was great. I just learned so much. But here I was with a place I felt comfortable with. They're compassionate. They go into caregiving and what have you. And I'm in a non-Native community. I have yet ever to be anywhere in Alaska that is a non-Native community. And I just come into old school racism in this town. And it's ingrained, and I just give it a grain of salt over it because of my upbringing. I was told Native people didn't have a pot to piss in until white people showed up, and that's okay. I was raised in the environment, but I left that household as a young person, and I went right back into the house of my abuser, essentially, and on a community-wide experience. And it hasn't been everyone, but when it does come up, and by people of caliber, I'm really appalled. And thank you for letting me vent.
Thank you. Sure. Mao, please respond.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And just wanted to add on that, you know, that the further you go out of Anchorage, it seems the decades that we go back, it's less diverse once we get out of Anchorage. And we understand that. And I share that with those who travel to Anchorage, who visit Anchorage, if they're minorities coming to Anchorage, just not so they're not shocked. But I share with every encourage every Alaskan, when you hear those words, when you hear something against our race and against our cultures, you're the only one there to stand for us. So it's that important to always stand, because no one else is there. And so I share that with you as I share it with my students, that you're the only voice that can stand at times. And just know that we're all standing with you. So when you're by yourself, no, you're not. We're all here standing, because we need more of that. So
all right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bill, for calling in. And we're going to take a really short break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
the University of Alaska Southeast, with schools of arts and sciences, management, education, and career education in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka. UAS, a learning community on campus and online. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing racial equity and the importance of all people being respected and having equal footing and how we can get there together. Our numbers are 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255 statewide, or 550-8422, 550-8422 in Anchorage, or you can email us talk@alaskapublic.org. Jory, I know that Bill and Homer, who relayed a painful story about what he has struggled with in his community, and Mal responded, and I think you wanted to as well.
I did. I want to say to Bill, Kleanakbak, thank you for sharing. I know that it's not easy. It wasn't easy to share that, and I want to say that you're not alone. And as much as I would love to say that that's a unique experience, unfortunately, it's not. I'm Inupiaq. I grew up here in Anchorage. My family's from Unalakleet. I spent my summers there. And it's only really the last couple of years that I've come to a greater understanding of all of the ways that I've internalized the messaging within Alaska about Native people and how that has affected the choices that I've made, how it's affected the way that I do my work, how it affects how I parent my kids. And, you know, as a Native person, as an Indigenous person in Alaska, there are many, many, many ways that our experience here is diminished, not recognized. You know, I think about things like our state constitution. It doesn't explicitly recognize Indigenous people. It does recognize the pioneers who came and everyone afterward. And you look at the state seal. No recognition of Indigenous people. It doesn't give recognition to the fact that we've been here for 10,000 plus years, and it was under our stewardship of these lands that, you know, all Alaskans today can benefit from and celebrate the resources that we have as a rich state. I think about things like North to the Future, The Last Frontier, the ways that we talk about Alaska. You were speaking of language, Lori. The ways that we talk about our state often make it seem as though Native people weren't here before statehood, let alone give recognition to and appreciation for our people. And, you know, we do internalize that. we internalize the education system that doesn't talk about our experience as Native people here. It doesn't give us context for understanding the challenges that we face as Native people. If all we know about our people are the challenges that we face, because that's what you see often in media, are the hurts that we have in our community, but you don't know the context for where that came from. Mm. And you don't know or understand the true history of Alaska that led to generations of grief, hurt, trauma that continue to affect every single Native person in Alaska. If you don't understand that, then, you know, you don't actually understand, I guess, the collateral damage of how Alaska came to be a state. That's kind of a weird way to put it. But for non-Native Alaskans, not understanding that is an important part of understanding Alaska. But for Native people here, not understanding also the context of how we came to be where it is, we internalize it and we feel like something is wrong with us. But that's not the truth. That's not the case. Our people are here despite all efforts to the contrary. It's our resilience that allows us to still be here. So Bill and others who are listening, I just want to say that I appreciate you. I appreciate you sharing. And that's an important part in helping other people to understand our experience as Alaskans.
Well, and it's something that Mao said earlier in the program about people outside of your family do care about you. Mm-hmm. And you were making that message clear. This kind of leads into a question about some of what you were describing with the Constitution of the state and the state seal. In order for everyone to get equal footing in society, there has to be a recognition of what has been in place for generations. And one of those things is white privilege. How do you describe this to help others understand what this means? Because that's a difficult thing for people, some people, to understand and really believe. I know that for myself, I was given the gift of that lesson many years ago. When I was with a friend who is the editor of News from Indian Country, and we were driving to Madison, Wisconsin to cover an event, and I got pulled over, had a broken taillight. I knew I had a broken taillight. My expectation from this officer was, without even consciously thinking of it, was that, okay, maybe I'll get a fix-it ticket, but that was all. My friend, his whole body language changed. He suddenly was looking straight forward. He sat up really straight. He got very quiet. And I thought, what's going on? And it was like a sledgehammer for me. That's when I understood what white privilege was. So subtle. I had an expectation that I would be treated respectfully and it'd be fine. He had an expectation that this could be real trouble. I'm an Indian man with a white woman in the car. We're driving down the road. He didn't know what could happen. Wow, what a lesson for me. I'm very grateful for that lesson because I've thought of that so many times through the years. How do you talk about it? Kevin, do you want to start? How do you talk to people about what is white privilege and how that's impacted everyone?
Well, Lori, this is something that goes to my personal core because I look at... Wow, this is really hard. White privilege. From a personal perspective, I look at it from what occurred to my daughter when she was 12 years old. My daughter... My daughter was sexually assaulted by a white man when she was 12 years old. And the grief and the pain that she had to go through, as well as our family, to attempt to get justice for what had occurred, nothing happened. The man wound up doing one day in jail, regardless of the fact of indictment, evidence, and so forth that said otherwise. The district attorney at the time said he did not feel comfortable with taking the testimony of a black child against a white man. So that hit hard. It was a painful event in my life, in my family's life. And ultimately, because we stuck together as a family, I'm proud to say that my daughter eventually, when she graduated from West High School, she earned an academic scholarship and went on to Johns Hopkins University. She subsequently graduated from there, and now she's employed by Johns Hopkins University because they didn't want to let her go. So,
what a triumph.
Yes, it was. It was a trying event, but because the family, we stuck together, and with myself being, you know, the man of the family, the father, it was my position to make sure that my family held together and not to let this negative aspect take control. Even though there were some times that, life got hard, but overall, we stuck together and we triumphed. So from the judicial system, there was that aspect of white privilege because the words out of the former, and this was in 1984, so the words out of the district attorney's own mouth was that he did not feel comfortable with taking the testimony of a 12-year-old black child over that of I can't remember the gentleman's age, but over a grown white man's word. But, we've moved on. It's still to this day, 34 years later, I still feel the pain because that was my child, or it is my child.
And you didn't get justice.
And no, there was no justice. So it's just you take life one day at a time. You be thankful that you wake up and see the new day. And you just try to do the best you can. The other thing about white privilege we see within the within the working community, there's a tendency that you may or you may not get a job based on the color of your skin, and that's still in effect to this day. And also, it's dependent upon what your background is. There are those within our community that still have a tendency to like to hold whatever occurred in the past, they like to hold it over your head and to keep you down and do not want to see you excel in whatever opportunities that may present themselves. So that becomes a disadvantage. And it's sorry to say that you have those that say they're Christian. And they have these Christian beliefs and so forth. But in the meantime, they have a tendency to cherry pick whatever said or whatever they hear through the biblical word and so forth. But they have a tendency to put race into the equation. And that subsequently becomes a barrier.
And I'm sure it's discouraging if the community support isn't behind you. And I'm sure those are some of the things that you faced during that time. So, you know, and that's what we're hoping when those issues arise, that community backs our community, our citizens. And so even myself, I'm 6'6", 300 pounds. So when seen by a police officer or anyone of authority, it's definitely always to look at that with a very cautious as they approach me. So it's always that if I go out at night to dinner with my wife, sometimes she'll have to drive. So it's just because if I'm driving, it's most likely I'll get pulled over. But automatically, I'll stick my head out because usually they'll say, oh, it's Mao, you know. And so those are things that happen pretty often. But it's also to know realistically in the times that we're living right now, to know that these are issues that we face. And so I got some choices to make. I can either take it in a negative direction or just go through the process and get on and move forward. And so a lot of times, sometimes we have to do those things, even if we don't want to, you know, get out of our car when we didn't do anything wrong. And it's something that I think that around the country, everyone's facing. And so it's to know that we're in Alaska. It's a red state. It's a place that recently, I think over the past year, there was a DEA officer who filed a lawsuit against the APD for racial profiling in a community that's saying there is no racial profiling. So when these things happen, we got to question. But it's also to say that as we're questioning, what are the solutions that we will establish and implement always? And not only through the policies, but through our actions as citizens, that we can change some of these things only through our actions. But it is that being a 6'6", 300-pound Samoan, that I understand when I go into a bar sometimes that I might not get served as well, but I can look at the choices that others have made that probably made that happen, you know? And so those are things that shouldn't happen, to where I should be able to go and have a drink. But based on actions in the past, we are now all perceived to be the same way. And that's one thing that I just want to change with folks is, don't pull us all together. You know, give us all the opportunity and give us the opportunity to be open-minded. I travel around the state with a group of students and mentors to show examples of that. And my kids ask, why do we do this? And the reason is, I share with them is, just know that if we're the only Polynesian dance group, the only break dancers, the only reggae, the only of all these things, then we're the first experience that they have of the many cultures that we represent. And if that is so, let it be the best experience, because their next experience, they will be open-minded to that next opportunity. They will look at that as a positive opportunity to interact somebody. So it is that all these issues that are out there, it's to know that we can work on them individually in our own ways, while policies and all those other areas are also being worked on. But it's a daunting task right now, I think, is kind of what everyone's sharing and what we're seeing in the media as well.
And I keep coming back to that idea of caring about each other, all of us caring about each other outside of our family, that more collective sense of family in the much broader sense. It, you know, my significant other, I remember him telling his sons, my stepsons, when they were younger, they're African American, and him telling them, when you're out with your pals, and if you're the only kids of color in that group, you better really be on your P's and Q's, because if something goes down, if a window gets broken, if something happens, they're gonna look at you first. And that was so painful for me to realize that he had to have that conversation with them. But I understood why it was. We're going to go back to the phones now for just a moment. Joel is in Ketchikan. Hi, Joel.
Hi.
Did you have a question?
I had a comment, and just I was curious what the guests thought about this notion. Yeah, I'm born and raised in Ketchikan. My family moved up here in the 50s, so I'm not indigenous. But what I've observed is that the percentage of Native Alaskans is growing, and the Alaska's generally been, since statehood, a transient place where people come and go all the time. That, coupled with what's going on with the state's finances, is going to drive that transiency even more, so that you're going to have more people potentially leaving the state. And I guess to get to my point, I think that Natives will take, in particular, in outside of Anchorage, a bigger and bigger role in the communities, because they will be a larger percentage of the community by default. And, you know, just from my experience in Ketchikan, I think there's something like 5,500 of the folks in the borough are registered with a tribal entity, which is, you know, over a third of the population. So I'm curious what your guests thought about that. And I would just say also, my own experience, my stepfather was a Tsimshian, but he was a Tsimshian that was a self-hater. And, my first sort of racist remarks I ever heard in my life, unfortunately, came from him. And it was regarding his own, you know, culture. And I don't know. I'm curious what, and also what's going on in Anchorage and in sort of the more metropolitan areas, if that's the experience as well. So, if anybody had any comments on that.
All right. Well, thank you, Joel. You were talking about your stepfather's self-oppression, that the tools of oppression are so effective that people often pick them up themselves, unfortunately. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll get our guest's reaction to Joel's comments and hopefully fit in a few more calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Full Circle, delivering organic produce and groceries across Alaska since 2006, featuring fresh pasta, coffee, fish, and baked items from Alaskan producers. More at fullcircle.com/APRN. If you're looking for a career that will put you to work immediately without any educational debt, think about the apprenticeship program and learn to become a construction craft laborer. The construction industry requires hard work, provides great pay, and a bright future while building Alaska. Application deadline for the apprenticeship program is March 31st. Call to begin your debt-free career track today, 907-345-3853. This message sponsored by Alaska Laborers Training School.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are talking about racial equity today. We have amazing guests in our studio, Jory Paoli with First Alaskans Institute, Mau Tosi, a youth advocate and Anchorage businessman, and then also Kevin McGee, who is the first vice president of the Branch 1000 NAACP chapter here in Anchorage. Let's go back to the phones for a moment and hear from Marion in Juneau. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Lori, and it's an honor to talk to you guys. I just wanted to say real quickly, I have been reading a lot about this, and one of the things I've taken to heart is that it's partially the responsibility of white folks to talk to their friends and family to fight a lot of these wrong ideas, because a lot of them, unfortunately, are not listening to leaders and communities of color. And one of the problems I keep encountering is that whenever we say the word race or racism or racist, friends and family, people I know will say, well, I couldn't possibly be racist. I don't have a racist bone in my body. And what they mean, I think, is they don't have any negative feelings toward anyone. They don't think badly about people. But that's not all of what racism is. So much of it has just been in the air and in the water and in the culture for generations, impacting how communities interact and how people see each other, that you can, not have a negative thought in your body and still be unconsciously racist to the bone. And it takes a lifetime to fight that and undo it. And I wish that change, it's a little boring semantic change, but it means everything when you're trying to explain what white privilege is to people and trying to explain why it's so terrible when they trap other folks in this shell of not being seen for their individuality, but as a member of a group. And that I think if we could start to shift that idea that racism is not a negative thought you have, but a thing you've been just steeped in for your entire life that you have to fight, then we might start to make more progress.
I think you're getting at the heart of what white privilege is, for one thing. And I think that's a good point to be made, that racism isn't necessarily, certainly it is in some settings, a very negative thought, but in other ways it can be just these subtle things that need to be addressed and talked about. Does someone want to kind of respond to that?
I think, Mau? Yeah, thank you for that, actually. How I look at it is that majority of folks, they'll look at that if it doesn't affect them, then it's not their problem. And that's where it all kind of is that I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not racist, so I shouldn't have to put forth any actions. And I think that's it, is trying to get some action to happen. And just as you shared, is it can be on a lower level and just to discuss and share with your friends individually. So those things can definitely provide a positive impact into this issue. So really appreciate you sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Marion, the fact is racism is not born to anyone. This is a fact of life that's taught. And it's dependent upon how the parents raise their own children. And if they teach them this divisive approach toward people of color, indigenous people, it ultimately bears fruit. And you commonly, more often than not, a person of color, we have a tendency to hear someone that is white says, oh, my best friend is black. From that standpoint, we understand that that's their attempt to say that I'm not racist. I have a friend that's black, and that might be the only one. A prime example, say at for our country as a whole, the first African American president of the United States, Barack Obama. Those of color said, "This is fantastic. Maybe our country is moving forward and attempting to bring others into the fold." But then you still had that aspect of our population says, and they're continuing to say, is we need to take our country back, because all of our former presidents were always white men. So now you have that aspect of our population of feeling that something was taken away from them, and that they the commonality of what they've been saying is we need to take our country back. And that's actually been a wedge issue amongst our country, and it's something that's been ultimately destructive. And we need to find a way to, regardless, everyone's going to have a difference of opinion, but if you don't sit down at the table and try to work your disagreements out, we're going to continually be in this position.
One of the things that you said, Mao, about how you have to talk to your children, when Marion was talking about, you know, saying things and reaching out, I think that's what one of the key pieces is, that everyone has to be involved, just like you have to go out of your way to show that you're not the big scary guy who's going to do something in a negative way. Those of us that are from the white community also have to make sure that our children know that you need to go out of your way, too, to help people feel accepted and honored and respected.
And it's an example, actually. So if your kids see you going out of your way every day, every month, every year, as they get older, they'll also go out of their way. So it's always to plant that seed to the younger generation. It's the only way we're going to change and break the cycles of the past is planting the seeds to our young generation. And that's why I really love the work that I get to be a part of in connecting with our teens and having them connect to the younger students, just because it's all about planting the seed.
And it's all about that extended family idea of all of us being part of a larger family. Thanks to my guests. That's it.
Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. And by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
The Elder Mentor Program is about sharing the wisdom and culture of Alaskan elders in classrooms and communities across Alaska. Elders age 55 and older bring storytelling and modeling of appropriate behavior to the next generation. Earn a small stipend while supporting educational professionals and children. Alaska's Elder Mentors serve through the National Senior Corps Program. Mentor information at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.